outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
One of the joys of this journey is getting to be with people over 15, 20, 25 years and watch how Jesus takes shape in them through the challenges they face, through the difficult moments, through choices that have less to do with their own self-interest and more to do with extending God's kingdom in the world, and celebrate the joy of a transformative relationship that leads someone into more gentle space, more honest space, space with great integrity and heart. If that's not what a God journey does, then it's really not worth much, I don't think. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. I want to welcome you back to this edition. I want to introduce you to a friend of mine that I've known for almost 20 years now, and I've met him in various venues around the country. I've watched his life take shape, and we're going to do a bit of a conversation with him, and I'm excited about making him available and some of the resources that he's putting into the world to encourage people on this journey. I think you'll find it of real interest. Before we do, however, I want to celebrate the fact that the Finding Church book finally went to the printers yesterday, so it's well on the way to being printed. Our release date is October 15th. I know I've tortured some of you with quotes and thoughts and even reading some of the chapters here, meant to kind of help share with you what's been important in my life before we could actually share the whole thing. Well, now we're getting close to sharing the whole thing, so it's going to be available shortly. October 15th is our release date. We're taking pre-orders now at Lifestream. If you'd like to pre-order, you can do that now, so you can get a copy as soon as we have them available. It's also going to be available eventually Amazon, other outlets as well. But with every pre-order we get, we're also going to send, as we've mentioned before in the podcast, just an extra book with your order. That's not an extra book for every book you order. That's just an extra book from the ones that you want, and hopefully our gift to you so that you can share it with other people if you find it worthy of doing so. And we're hoping that some of you will help us out too, social media, whatever. And I don't mean just advertise the book for us. I don't really mean that at all. I mean, if something in the book touches you, if something encourages your heart, maybe quoting it, sharing it, to really put into the world a conversation about what this church is that Jesus is building and how it takes shape and how we get to be part of it. I hope that will become of interest to you. Also want to mention before we get to the interview, some of the travel that's coming up in case you want to connect with us. This weekend, I'm going to be in Bakersfield, California. So I know if you don't know about it now, it's probably too late, but you're welcome to join us there if you'd like to. And then later in the month, in fact, I'm going to leave first of next month, October 3 through 7 or 8, I'm going to be in the Lexington, Kentucky area if you want to connect with me there. From there, going up to Central Ohio, somewhere between Columbus and Canton. And if you want to come join us there on the next weekend, the 10, 11, 12, you'd be welcome to do that as well. And then at the beginning of next month, October 31 through November 3, going to be in Houston, Texas, if you want to come and join us there. 3 through 6, I'm going to be in November, going to be in San Antonio, Texas area, and then going to finish up that weekend, 7, 8, 9, in Corpus Christi. So that's just some of the travel coming up. You get details at Lifestream, people contact if you'd like to join us. I've known Dan Mayhew for almost 20 years. We met as part of a house church convention a long time ago, a conference, and the relationship's kind of grown with it. We've crossed paths in various ways, and I also cross paths with people who cross paths with Dan. And I hear amazing things about this man, the genuineness of his life, and how God's taking shape in him. So I thought it'd be fun to have a conversation with him, add it to this podcast so you can get to know him too, and some of the resources he and his wife actually are putting into the world. So here it is. This is my conversation yesterday with Dan Mayhew. Well, I want to introduce to you a friend of mine, Dan Mayhew. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Wayne.
Dan Harold's from the Portland area. We intersected, gosh, almost probably 20 years ago, huh?
You know, it doesn't seem like it could be that long, but I think it's been all of that.
It has been quite a while. We kind of intersected at a time when we were both maybe leaning more toward house church than we are today. Are you still about the same journey or what?
Well, I don't like to use the term house church,
you
know, for probably the same reasons you do, because church doesn't have to be in a house, but it quite often is. So,
yeah, it's a great place to celebrate the life of the church, no doubt about it.
Yep.
So we met in that, but your journey's been kind of interesting because you were an associate pastor at some megachurch for a time, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Way back
in the
day. I don't
know whether it was mega church, but it was a church of a couple thousand.
It was, well, mega. Mega's more than 200, I guess. I don't know what the,
yeah, okay.
I don't know what the line is. And then you did house church for a while. You got a network of some house churches up in the Portland area. You call the Summit Fellowships, is that right?
It's the Summit Fellowships. It's a network of about a half a dozen official.
Okay.
But we have connections with other fellowships of varying kinds around the city and around the metro area.
Okay. So, and that's been through some interesting, I mean, there was a days of a kaboom, I remember, way back. There have been some relational challenges in that process, has there not?
Yeah, that is for anybody that thinks that meeting in homes is the answer to all problems. It seems to be something about having people involved that that makes makes the form almost irrelevant when it comes to problems.
And we can laugh about it, but it was a pretty painful season, as I recall.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We often say that that was the most painful experience we've had in our lives. It right up there with the death of family members and the whole thing. Yeah, it was very difficult.
Yeah, I always say relationships are kind of like marriage, which is also a relationship. But when they're good, they're very, very good. And when they turn dark, they are incredibly painful.
Yeah, and it was difficult. We look back on it and we realize that the Lord used it, but would we want to go through that again? I don't think so. And we lost some very good friends that to this day we haven't seen those relationships restored.
Oh, really? And this was 10, 12 years ago, as I recall, something like that?
Yeah, 97, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, almost, gee whiz, that's more than that then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think we've all had that experience in Christianity. It's one of the things that I muse on in the new book I've been trying to finish up here about, you know, why is it when we put relationships into a institutional construct, then other things become more important than the relationship?
And, boy, isn't that the truth? And even when you try to deinstitutionalize, which is what we were trying to do, you still wind up having some of the same issues.
Yeah. And you've been married for how long? To Jody?
42 years.
42. You're ahead of Sarah and I just a little bit, so we're going to let you do that. We're going to let you stay in front of us. Yeah. And last I was up there, you were interiming, or you were helping a more traditional congregations kind of exist for a while. You still doing that?
No.
Oh.
Interesting experience. Yeah. I started as an interim in a small church that had gone through a painful split. And they asked me to come and preach for them, and I said I would do that. And then eventually they said, well, why don't you hang around, just be preaching pastor? And I said, well, okay, maybe we can do some more relational stuff. We even had you in one time.
I kind of remember that. It's almost a repressed memory now, but I do remember that.
But I discovered that, you know, sometimes when you're dealing with churches, they're well entrenched. They've got a leadership structure that is well established, and they're entrenched in that. It became a very difficult time for me. We had some other things going on in our lives at the same time. My sister was dying and my son was having some issues. But the stress of trying to navigate an institutional structure like that, I actually did pay a price health-wise over that season of time. I used to think that stress was something that for the weak.
Ooh,
you know.
Well, I'm glad you've been disabused of that notion.
Oh, boy, am I. I have lots of appreciation for people who've undergone anxiety and stress now.
Yeah, unfortunately, life hurls a whole lot at us to be stressed about unless we find our way out of it or find our way into a deep sense of the Father's peace in the midst of it. It's ugly.
Well, I remember praying quite a number of times, Lord, either help me change this congregation so that they're more engaged in relational kinds of stuff, or release me. And eventually he released me, and I will always remember the feeling as I was cleaning out my desk.
Yeah. I remember the Sunday I was there. I just felt bad for you. I felt bad. How did you find your way back in this and all the hoopla of the managing of a service on Sunday and all the stuff you were caught in again? And I'm just going, I mean, it was neat servanthood to the people there who needed some help, comfort, healing, whatever. That's great.
And good people, nice people. The structure nearly collapsed me. It told me that, no, I am where I belong, and that is outside of the institution.
Isn't that the story of most structures? I mean, great people.
Yeah,
meet them in another context and things would be great. But now we're trying to share something we call church together, and we're going to fight over what we think's the best way to do that. And
yeah,
we just keep winging on each other, even when we don't want to.
Sad. Yeah. Yeah. I've come to the conclusion, I guess we don't share power well. We don't share resource well.
Well, and I think that really puts your finger on it, Wayne. There's wherever there's little pockets of power and somebody willing to fit into that pocket, it's going to be a dangerous situation. And that's what I've observed in a lot of different institutional kind of settings. You wind up with these little pockets of power that people have nestled into, and it becomes a problem.
Yeah, and I would, my experience would be on both sides of that. People, when there's little pockets of resource and power, mm-hmm. about 80% of people can navigate those in a generosity and love and an honesty mm-hmm. and integrity, and about 20% can't. And then they end up pooing on the environment for everybody else. I mean, it always seems to be that. And then I know my time in structures way back in the day was, how do we find a way that can manage that without destroying it? And I don't know about you, but I gave up. I went, I don't think there is a way. Because the church presupposes transformed or people being transformed. It doesn't presuppose power-hungry people or dishonest people or disingenuous people that you have to keep managing around.
Yeah. And not only that, the structure itself just kind of invites that, brings out even the worst in us, even good people in a powerful situation. And, you know, that sounds probably more significant than it is when we talk about power. But when you get people in a powerful situation, sometimes they don't know how to handle it. And it's not supposed to be there in the first place. You know, why do we need to deal with hierarchies?
Yeah, at the point, it's an old creation construct. And Jesus mm-hmm. invited us to be part of something else. But the institutions we keep creating look very much like McDonald's or the military or like everything else in the world. So
mostly, I've often compared it to restaurants. I mean, look at the way you come into town, you want a particular cuisine, so you look it up, you know, and you choose Baptist, okay? Mexican. And you go, and there's somebody there, hands you a menu, we call it a bulletin, and then they escort you to your chair, and you sit down, and you look, there's a floor show, that's kind of nice, and
sometimes.
while you're looking at the menu, you're trying to see if there's anything there you like, and you check that out for a while, and then eventually there's the main course, and you leave, and the only difference is you get a chance often to shake hands with a chef, and that just doesn't the similarities really oughtn't be that exact. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Why is it fine for a restaurant and not for real life in Christ? Mm-hmm. Why? Do you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what have you discovered? Why? Why is that true?
Why is this fine?
Yeah, why is it fine for a restaurant? Because you go to restaurants. I go to restaurants. Mm-hmm. I like picking out what I'm going to eat, eating it, and going home.
Yeah.
But that's very different from the kind of community God wants us to share.
Well, yeah, the Lord gave us a commandment. He said that we should love one another. You know, I'm giving you a new commandment. I want you to love one another. And the thing that impresses me about that is that's a commandment that you cannot obey. You cannot obey it alone. You're going to obey the great commandment.
I love me. I don't mind hanging out with me. I'm great.
I'm going to hang out with me. But he says, I want you to love one another. Well, you can't do that alone.
No, you can't.
And more than that, you can't do it alone. And not only that, you've got, he says that you have to love one another. He says that this is the way the world is, as I have loved you. You know, he inserted that too, which made it sacrificial. But he says, and then the world is going to know that you're my disciples because you love each other. Well, that ought to tell us something about the nature of love. It's observable. It's not something that you just feel. It's something that apparently people can see and say, whoa, what's up with that?
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, not as often visible in our world as we wish it were.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing about restaurants, too, you know, I think the way we've been able to get by with it for so long is because our churches have grown up in this kind of capitalist society, culture we're in. We're used to free market, and so we're comfortable with it. It works to a degree, and so we formulate our churches. We form our churches around that model, and it seems to work, you know. And I think God blesses it to an extent, but it eventually gets in the way of that new commandment, love each other.
Yeah, certainly God's in it because God's just wherever people are, making himself mm-hmm. known. But whether that means this is what he wants or this is the ideal or mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of it because someone needs to make a living. And
you know, you didn't say that.
Yeah, I did. So we got to put fences around it so I can claim these as my sheep and derive income from my sheep. And I think that's driven a lot of even the competition between the restaurants in various communities, because it's at least about income, maybe about ego, maybe about other things that most people try to get from their job or career or whatever, instead of, man, how do we celebrate this lifelong, loving relationship that continues to serve and doesn't have to have the contest of power?
Absolutely. And, you know, my experience with pastors, and I've spent a lot of time praying with pastors of what I call real churches. And
I saw the finger quotes. I'm not sure the rest of the audience did.
I don't think that probably translated onto the audio. But,
no, I'm sure it didn't.
You know, I prayed a lot with pastors of more traditional institutional style churches, and these are good men and women. You know, they are godly in so many respects. They are trying their hardest to do the things that God's called them to do. You know, so I can't put these folks down, but they are locked in the institution as I found myself in.
Yeah,
and sometimes they experience what I've been known to call that holy frustration, where they just are trying to deal with the issues of the form that they're in, and they just don't know how to do it any other way.
And I think it's very rare, the conscientious pastor who's not wrestled with that.
Oh, absolutely.
The difference between what I long for in my heart, the reason I got into this thing, and then the reality of my life trying to manage a system that's virtually unmanageable without being heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm. And they find themselves being heavy-handed when they really don't want to, you know. And it's so unfortunate, because I see these people that are trying very, very hard. Some of them are very good friends of mine. They've managed to not do away with me, because we do things a little different. You know, we've done something called Pastor's Prayer Summits, where we go it's a 4-day. Worship and prayer gathering, where pastors from a similar geographical area but different traditions will come together and just spend that time in prayer. It's non-scripted and all of that. And typically, if I facilitate one of those, I'll introduce myself. I'm Dan Mayhew. I usually say, for those purposes, I say, I minister in a community of house churches called the Summit Fellowships. I use the term house church because, well, it tends to be more meaningful than some of the other terms I could use to them.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you how many times when we're sitting around the dinner table or something, a pastor will come up, sit down, and we'll chit-chat for a little bit. Then they'll lean across the table, you know, and they'll say, "Hey, tell me about this house church thing you do." And really what they're asking is, is there a place where the church can flourish just as relationships and not without all of the other stuff that's killing me? I mean, that's really what they're asking.
Yeah.
And with all sincerity.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the hunger is there. No doubt. Mm-hmm. You've Absolutely. Done these prayer summits. I mean, you've done them internationally. You've done them for years. What drives that? I mean, what in your heart continues to make space in your life to bring pastors from a given community together, help them find a way to relate and pray together? What drives that in your heart, Dan?
Well, I think what drives that is, well, first off, that's where I first discovered a church experience where you're dealing without the format, without the form. You are there to pray with and for other people. And I found that the first one I went to, I was still an associate pastor at a fairly large church. And to be quite honest, I was about ready to pack it all in. Hmm. And it was at a prayer summit after having been prayed for by these brethren, where the Lord started giving me guidance to doing it a different way, which is one of the reasons we chose the Summit Fellowships as a name. You know, we were reluctant to have a name at all, but we didn't want it to be anything we did to be called Dan and Jody's Church. So we decided we better name it.
Or the No Name Fellowship.
Or the No Name Fellowship, which is, well, yeah, we know where that's going.
Yeah.
But some roots go down there. I learned to meet that way at those settings. And also, I came to appreciate the struggle that so many of these institutional leaders and pastors have to face. And there's so many of them that are just barely keeping themselves afloat, trying to do the work of the ministry as best they can.
Yeah. And not all of them stay afloat forever. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of people give up at some point saying, I can't do it any longer. And some of those get on a better journey. Some of those don't. Some of those go down a long, dark road, unfortunately.
Yeah. I've got friends that I have prayed with since 1990. Okay.
Yeah.
And the majority of them, the vast majority of them are no longer in the more traditional church setting. They have migrated into something else. And it's been rather interesting to watch their journey.
Yeah.
So
I love the variety of things you seem to get involved in as I intersect with your life periodically and watch where God kind of puts you in and your willingness to go serve wherever you feel nudged to serve and not just got my little thing I'm trying to make happen. I'm really embarrassed you now because I was your name came up on a hike up in the in Washington State a couple of months ago. I was with a brother and we got talking about you. I didn't know he knew you until we got talking. And in the midst of our talking, just what both of us celebrate about the integrity, honesty, passion of your life and your willingness to follow God even when you can't script out the conclusions and willing to take a journey. And I tell you, I appreciate that about you. I appreciate your generosity of heart to me every time we've intersected. I appreciate just the honesty of your life. It's good stuff.
Well, I'm humbled.
Told you I'd embarrass you.
Yeah.
That was the plan.
Thanks a lot. Didn't know you were going to do that.
Yeah. Well, longtime listeners of the God Journey are saying, now, Dan Mayhew, I remember that name from somewhere. I remember that name. And you've never been on before.
No.
But Brad and I talked about one of your books at length. It's called The Butterfly and the Stone.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that book a little bit, because I want people to be refreshed what that's about. I recommend that often to people.
You know, and I can't thank you enough, Wayne. That was that you found something valuable in it was very encouraging to me. The book is The Butterfly and the Stone, God's Love on a Prodigal Journey, and it is the account of our experience with our son, who, as I say, spent 100 years in Iraq in 2004.
Wow.
And it's just the story of his prodigal journey and what kinds of things we've gone through with him as parents. And also to just, I wrote it probably to process the experiences we were going through myself, but I also felt like there are a lot of parents who are dealing with prodigal children in the prodigal experience that need to know they're not alone. And this is not their fault. This is an experience that a lot of us as parents are experiencing. And the thing that I learned from it over and over again, and this, if I were to establish the premise of the book, would be the premise is that we love our children in spite of the things that they may put us through, in spite of the horrible experiences we may have while on that prodigal journey. We love them. And isn't it then perfectly reasonable to assume that God, with his eternal love, loves us just as much and more?
Yeah, if you being evil know how to love your kids, how much more?
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, even Jesus talked that way. Yeah.
That's exactly what he said. And it's like, if I can find, I guess my conclusion was that little flame of love that I was able, that I'm to this day we maintain for our child who is struggling, although some good reports just recently. But as we've gone through those experiences, we realize that's a reflection, a little pale reflection of the love of God for us.
Yeah.
If it's there for us, for our children, it's there in him for us.
That's what I loved about the book was it didn't resolve sweetly. It's still the middle of the story. I mean, it didn't have this nice little, we did this little hocus pocus and God did this. And now our son is the sweet little Sunday school kid we thought we had raised 40 years ago, 30 years ago.
And if I had continued writing, Wayne, the length would be somewhere in the neighborhood of War and Peace.
Yeah, I get that.
Because as a matter of fact, just the last couple of days, first, it needs to be said, we've never been really estranged in terms of bitterness and rancor develop. There have been some times we had to cut him loose because we weren't helping. But just recently, yesterday, I went out kayaking with him yesterday. Mm. I wouldn't place any bets as to where he may wind up. But this is one of those butterfly moments. That's where the title comes from. The butterfly and the stone. The butterfly is those moments of hope. We're in a butterfly moment.
Yeah.
Stone. Well, that was a few months ago.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. He came back with pain and addictions and things he'd seen that no one should have to see at 18, 19 years of age.
lost friends.
But what I loved about the honesty is you and Jody unpacked that. But this also this, what is loving and serving someone you care about, and what is enabling someone's pain? And you don't get to well, here's the three things that prove it's enabling, and here's the three things that proves it's helpful. Yeah. There really is not a line there. There really is, I've got to follow my heart and do what's next and seek God with all my heart. At times feel like I have to cut him off because we're just enabling. Other times love makes space for someone. There's no place else to go. And I loved watching you guys navigate that and even not just have these little trite five little principles to deal with it. It really is. This is something I think every parent wants to be invited into. God and I have to sort this out with my child. And that's an ongoing process that you're still involved in. So,
We're still involved in it, and there aren't any easy answers. And I knew when I wrote, when I started writing it, that there weren't going to be any easy answers. It wasn't going to wrap up neatly at the end.
Yeah.
And we're still on the journey. And the book came out. I can't remember when we.
It was 3 or 4 years ago, I think. Something.
At least, yeah.
You had another book called Sword of Submission.
Sword of Submission.
That sounds scary, dude.
when we actually approached a couple of commercial publishers about it, and they were quite adamant that we should never use the term submission in the title because it was a toxic term.
Yep.
You know, nobody wants submission, but we thought, that's what it's about.
Well, Sword of Submission even sounds like, you know, it's almost Islamic, maybe. Or fundamentalist.
Yeah, maybe that is a little.
Wow, that's scary.
The reason we use the term sword is because we are, when you're talking about submission, we're talking about the most powerful weapon against darkness and against evil in the world that exists. And that is a submitted in love relationship with Father. And that's where the power of being human really lies, and it's what we lost in the garden, and is what Jesus came to reestablish in our hearts.
And it's what really challenges our flesh that would prefer to do things its own way, and even school God in a better way to do things than God could possibly think to do them for himself.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And the approach we took, the way I put it is, it's not about keeping order in your family and in your home. That's not what the book is about. The book is about how Jesus came and firsthand demonstrated what it was to submit to Father, to submit as a slave, and to submit in the bride and bridegroom relationship. It was submission isn't about keeping order. It's about learning how to relate with Father. That's what the book is about. So it is definitely not about, you know, who's in charge in the home, who's in charge in the church, and keeping yourself in line. It is not about that. That's one of the reasons we wrote it. We were tired of that nonsense.
Yeah, I bet you have to give that disclaimer a lot when people hear the title of the book, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think the whole element of the new creation is not a negotiation of power. Because it is an experience of self-surrendering love. There really isn't a real construct of the new creation. There's no power to negotiate.
Right.
There's just love and service to each other. And I think when Ephesians 5 gets to that language, and we just take the wives submit to your husband language and throw it back into the old creation as a proof of power, we've now taken something that wasn't meant to be at all and created an environment that is not only unhealthy, it's absolutely destructive to people.
Well, and I hate it when women, especially, I guess. Oh, yeah. And I hate it when people just lift that little passage out and they say, wives submit to your husbands. Well, you need to start a few verses earlier where it says, submit yourselves one to another. So many people try to make this a proof text about why women need to submit to their husbands in the home and all of the rest of it. And our main point is that, no, submission is about learning our relationship with the Father. It isn't about trying to keep each other in line.
Yeah, and even that relationship with Father is less about power than it is about love. We put God in that. I was asked last week, I did a mission school up Northern California, and I was asked in a conversation, just, Wayne, how do you see the headship in your home? What does it mean that you're head of the house or head of Sarah or whatever? I said, here's what that means. And I'll see if this flies by the author of The Sword of Submission.
All right.
I said, I think what that does is it gives me a responsibility to love Sarah like God wants Sarah loved, and to help Sarah become everything for which God put her on the planet to become. Is that pretty close?
Isn't that what Jesus came to do as the bridegroom?
Absolutely.
Isn't that what he came to shepherd, encourage, build up, and create in his disciples, his bride, exactly what they were designed to do. Jesus came and sacrificed himself for his bride so that she can become all that she was supposed to be. And
beautiful, isn't it?
That's the example that we need to be forming in our homes. My job, as I see it, is to make sure that Jody is able to step into the fullness of who God intended her to be. That's my role.
Yeah. And there's nothing more fun in a relationship than helping somebody do that. I mean, the other stuff we do is scary.
I'll get people who will say, how do you feel about women in leadership?
Bigger question is, how do I feel about men in leadership?
Yeah, you're tracking with me.
There you go.
I take him to the Last Supper where Jesus, he strips himself for work. He kneels down at his disciples' feet and he washes their feet, spends a significant part of the time that he's, the last time that he has with us before his crucifixion. And he washes their feet and he says, okay, now let me explain something to you. The rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them and they call themselves benefactors. It's not so with you. You can be called elders. No, he didn't say that. He said, that's not the way it is. If you're going to be great in the kingdom, you're going to be the servant of all. Yeah. And so I follow up that little picture and ask the person who asked me about women in leadership, do you have any problem with women in servanthood? Because that's what leadership looks like in the kingdom.
Yeah.
And if you got a problem with women in leadership, then maybe it's your understanding of what leadership is all about that needs to be reconfigured.
Yeah. And very few places where that doesn't need to be reconfigured. Well, we reconnected recently, in part because of this conversation I had in Washington saying, man, I'd love to touch base with Dan again. We've had a few chances to do that given the distance between us. And, you mentioned a new book, and part of that, you got to look at my new book, which you wrote a nice little endorsement for, and we're pre-selling those at the moment. Hopefully October 15th is a release date.
I'm looking forward to buying a bunch to give to people who I want to harass their conscience.
Oh, is that what it is? Is it a conscience harasser?
You are you're a conscience harasser, Wayne.
I hope not. I hope it's just fairly kind. I was reading some of it today in a studio to put it to an audio book. Mm-hmm. And I'm as I read it, I'm constantly surprised at how kind I said that instead of saying it the way it could have been said. But yeah. In our talking, and I asked if Jody was there. She's not, because it's been fun to kind of drop this in. Maybe it's unfair to ask you, but
we would have made sure that she was had you, and she might be, as far as I know. I'm out in my office here in the backyard, and if she stepped in, I don't know it.
So. Sitting under a tree. But she's got a new book out she wrote with another friend. Tell us about that book a little bit.
It's called The Ancient Deceptions, Uncovering the – what was it? I got to find the
– Got a copy right here.
I just have a copy.
As I watch Dan stretch through his office, looking, you never can find something when you need it.
No, I can't. I don't. I think we've given them all away. But the subtitle is, or the tagline is, "Uncover the oldest tricks in the book."
Hmm.
And the theme of the book, the way it's formed, is you have Jody goes through and she outlines the first deceptions that the enemy used to hornswoggle the human race. And she goes through several deceptions. Did God know? Does God care? These kinds of questions. And then our friend, Julie Tadema, she and her husband, Calvin, do a lot of healing prayer. She then adds to each deception kind of a case study of how that deception worked out in a person's life and how the Lord led them to begin to deal with coming at the truth, uncovering the deception, and then looking for the truth in the Word of concerning it. So that's how it works. It just works through the ancient deceptions, the things that the enemy has been doing to the human race ever since the garden.
They work so well. Why would he switch tactics?
I'm right.
They still work today. You can't trust God. God's out to get you. I got an email from someone today. Why isn't God's love bigger than my pain? And I'm going, it is. You may not know how to trust it yet, but it is. It's bigger than the same lie in the garden. You can't trust this father to care for you. You got to do it yourself.
Yeah, and he starts out with a question. You know, did God say, really?
Did he mean it?
Yeah. See, that's also part of this dovetails back with Sword of Submission. And the first part of Sword of Submission is kind of a backstory that deals with how the enemy has wound up positioned in the invisible realm to continue to propagate these lies. That predated the Ancient Deceptions book, but it's the Sword of Submission first part is written kind of as a narrative that deals with the deceptions and how they wind up being injected into the human spirit. So,
wow.
The two kind of they can partner together a bit.
That's great. Well, that's fairly new, isn't it, too?
Yeah, that one just came out within the last couple, 3 months.
Yeah, we're going to put the links up to find some of that stuff off your website. You can also find them at Amazon.com, I think. They're all there.
Oh, but, yeah, you can do that there, too.
Yours as well. So as we wind this up, Dan, looking back over the journey, the last stretch of 20, 30 years, what's the high points for you? What's the things that has found a way into your heart that you appreciate the most about this journey?
I think it would have to be the coming to the understanding that the only way the church can be the church is if she finds first her Lord and then one another. You know, Jesus was so clear that we were to be a body, a people. And that's why, Wayne, that's why I so much appreciated your book, because basically it lifts that message. It lifts that message of being together in the kingdom and in the kingdom journey. It lifts the message out of the institution and puts it heart to heart. And I think that is the thing that keeps coming back to me, that we're going to become mature in the crucible of unity. We're called into unity, and in the process of being unified, that's where the maturity comes from. We're perfected in unity. It doesn't mean we get good at being unified. It means that the process of being unified is what brings us to a mature walk with Jesus.
Yeah.
And
some of the language I've been using lately, there is no unity without a wholehearted engagement. That blows the whole unity by conformity thing out the window.
You know? Yeah,
we'll be of one mind because one mind's allowed to work.
Right.
Instead of, no, as Jesus transforms me. What I love with people like you, and I've got people like you all over the world that I know, whenever I'm with you, there's such an ability to sit down. I've been in your home, the resonance of fellowship and the camaraderie, maybe years between the connection, the next connection comes, and it's still there. That life is still there. And when we try to share, I mean, I've got people I knew that I've been closer to than I am to you, and yet because of selfishness or dishonesty or whatever, the relationship's the kaboom, it gets blown up.
That's what we call it,
in a horrible way. And it's just amazing that the church, if you and I were trying to share, I don't know, ownership of a publishing company, we probably wouldn't be friends today. We probably would have fought about something. But because we don't share anything other than the life of Jesus, this relationship just keeps growing. And if I'm supportive of something you're doing, I get to be supportive and encouraging. And if something you're into that I'm like, well, then I don't have to be. That's your obedience, not mine. And that the unity comes from the wholeheartedness of our engagements with each other. Where we're wholehearted, let's engage. And where we're not wholehearted, then let's love and lay down our lives. But we don't have to pretend we have a unity we don't have, because that's His job to bring us into that oneness of heart.
Well, I know I certainly have very, very much valued our relationship since Potato Creek, Indiana.
That's where it started,
That's where it was.
We had our own kabooms once, I think, somewhere near your particular abode. We had a conference that had a little bit of a blow up in it, too.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We just love the joy of trying to figure out how in the world to love each other in spite of it all, you know?
Yeah, and just keep doing it and being open-hearted enough. I think where relationships get broken is when any one party, and this can be marriage, church, whatever, one party decides they're right, and if people don't agree with me, they're wrong. That's the only thing that really blows up relationship. As long as you go, well, I think it might look like this, but I still care about what you think, and if we disagree at the end of the day, I want to find what's fair for us rather than, I'm right, God talked to me, the rest of you are morons.
Well, I always say, you've got a right to be wrong. You know, it's fine.
But it would be better if they even had the thought that they might be.
True enough.
It's the people that are never wrong that drive you insane. Well, Dan, thanks for your time this afternoon. Appreciate you joining our God Journey audience. I think people will be blessed to kind of know you, check out some of your resources, and we'll see where we connect again down the road.
I hope it's soon. Are you coming to Portland anytime soon?
It's not on my schedule, but there's not much on my schedule. You know, I don't book more than a couple months out. So all it takes is an invite, and then you never know where I'll show up. So
yeah, who knows? Maybe I'd invite you up here.
Ah, well, you do. I'm sure I'll find a way to get there, no doubt about it. So I always enjoy hanging with you.
We would look forward to it, Wayne. Thanks.
All righty, brother. God bless.
You too.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com or add your voice by calling our comment line at 805-539-6980.